Good evening and welcome to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget you can also take us with you whenever you're on the move. If you listen to us, you can on the website, you can stream us live, www.guardiantalkradio.com. And for those of you with a fancy telephone device, which I don't have, you can go to the App Store or the Play Store and you can download the radio app and you can listen to us all the time on your telephone. So this evening in the studio, I'm very blessed to have an artist from Grand Bahama. We don't have that many coming, so it's always a real pleasure when we get Grand Bahamians over in New Providence. And that is Mrs. Chantal Bethel. Good evening.
Good evening, Amanda. And thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. And welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Welcome back, because I know you were here for several weeks over the summer, and now you're back again. So we're very lucky because you managed to come visit us, and which is nice. Because, of course, one of our big challenges being a national institution is creating that connection with the other islands. So as a Grand Bahamian, I know you're very excited about and very integral in the possibility that we may be branching out.
Not just possibilities, it's going to be a reality.
Well, it's going to be a reality. I always like to say, until that day, we have the key to the door.
Yes, I know, but I want to be optimistic.
Yeah, absolutely. So, in fact, Chantal Bethel is one of our leading artists and has been in many shows in New Providence as well as in Grand Bahama. And so I invited her this evening because we have a really beautiful exhibition at the National Art Gallery right now, but I'd like to introduce you more widely to the audience. So I thought maybe we could just start off by talking a little bit just about how you became an artist and how you found that practice, because it was something you sort of grew into, later in your life. So why don't you talk a little bit about how you found that path?
Well, it's a very interesting story.
It
actually
is.
My background is business. I'm trained in business administration. And although I always loved art, and when I went to school in Belgium, and I visited many museums in Paris, wherever I was in London, I always loved going to museums, but I never thought I would be an artist. For many years, I worked as a financial controller for a medical center, and I always felt there was something missing, though. And I enjoyed my work, but somehow there was always, I was looking for something, I didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I started, when I first started making art, I was a Girl Guide leader.
Mm.
And one day I decided I was going to tell the girls about the conch.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I don't know why, I decided I needed to draw the conch instead of just getting a conch shell. So I went to, there was a shop downtown Freeport, so I picked up some paint brushes and some acrylic paint, and I started painting the conch shells and telling them about the conch and how there was a male and a female and how they reproduced and everything. And by the time I was done with the drawing and the paintings, everybody liked them. And I said, that was interesting.
It's interesting that you picked on that, too, because I think I was just talking about it with my own children. It's interesting that you decided to draw it and not bring it in, because I feel like sometimes if you make a mark, mm-hmm. whether that's actual writing or making an image,
it
does something in your brain that's different to just seeing.
Absolutely, because I could have just gotten the shelf.
Right.
But anyway, this is the way it started.
Mm.
And as I did that, and I was encouraging to go more into drawing, but then I was married and had very small children. It was very difficult to paint because they wanted to sit on my head. They wanted to paint.
They wanted to put their little hands all over the canvas.
Right. But I thoroughly enjoyed it when I was doing
mm-hmm.
it. So, and then I went back to work, so it was very difficult to mm-hmm. try to get into art, whatever. Anyway, in 1993, I had to have surgery. And my doctor, who worked at the medical center where I worked, and he said to me, "You really sometimes look very unhappy doing what you're doing." And I said, "Well, it's okay, whatever else." And he said, "Why don't you just do something you enjoy doing?" And I thought, I don't know when I'm going to die. I was very dramatic about it,
mm-hmm.
actually. And, I'm having surgery. Anything can happen. Let me start doing something I love doing. So I actually went and did a painting of his house and gave it to him. And this is how I actually started to paint.
That's amazing.
And so I started doing different things, watercolors, but I had no experience. Of course, I'm not formally trained.
Mm-hmm.
But after doing the work for a while, I realized that I needed instruction. And as a married person who had small children, there was no going to school to learn about art. So what I did, the alternative for me in the summers, I would go every summer, I would take off somewhere and actually do some 3 or 4 weeks of art and in different places. I went to the Fine Art Work Center in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. I went to the Art Center in Leuven and then in Canada. So this is how, you know, I actually was trained in the arts.
But well, so that's wonderful that your family must have supported that then, your children and your husband, that you were going off
in
the summer.
Well, they didn't quite understand what I was doing. Mm-hmm. Actually, at the beginning, it was a little difficult because it required time to make the art. And mm-hmm. I would be working all day and mm-hmm. making art at night. Mm-hmm. And that was very difficult. Mm-hmm. So, and I worked for my husband, by the way, mm-hmm. in the medical center. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So at first, I told him that I needed more time to make art when I realized I really wanted to get into art. So I said, I'll take one day off a week and just make art. Mm-hmm. And then I was, you know, having shows or whatever. And then I decided that that wasn't enough, that I needed to work part-time in mm-hmm. the accounts. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of very, you know, said, well, okay, we can try that. And then it took actually almost 10 years to convince him that I really didn't want to work as a financial controller.
Right.
And then I became a full-time artist in 2000.
Well, and I think also sometimes, I think it's common, no aspersions to your husband, who I think is, you know, supportive of your career.
Yes.
But very often when people are interested in art, it's very often seen by others as a hobby.
Right, exactly.
And why can't you just fit it in after
yes.
your job? Or why can't you just do that? Oh, you know, study something else at university and do the art on the weekend.
That's right, exactly. In fact, the auditor in a company told me one day, oh, you want to be an artist, you're going to be back in 1 year because you're going to need money.
Oh, dear. Yes, we're going to have to. What can we do to dispel those myths? That's the next section of the show. But yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, again, I think it is a bit of a myth. It's not easy to make a living as an artist, for sure, but it's not easy to make a living doing lots of things.
Exactly.
And, I mean, they say even now in the Bahamas, there's too many lawyers, right? There's people that have gone to law school and they've mm-hmm. studied and spent a lot of money mm-hmm. and they still are having a hard time finding a job. So it's interesting that some careers are seen as these automatic vehicles to success and others mm-hmm. not, whereas I feel, and you've spoke to it quite eloquently, that you know, you're doing something that brings you joy. And
exactly.
I think that's
exactly,
as a parent, that's the thing I keep trying to talk to my children about, is find what it is that gives you joy, because you're going to have to get up every day of your life
and do it
to do that.
I tell them that too. I tell my children the same thing. You must love what you're doing, and mm-hmm. if you love it and you work at it, mm-hmm. if you have a talent for it, mm-hmm. there's no reason why it can't work.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah? So
that's a really lovely story, I have to say. I think, and like I said, I think it's very interesting that you hit on that with the students. So I'm going to, the way I discovered your work was I'd seen a few early works of yours, and I came back home about 5 years ago, and I was in Dungalik Studios, and I was looking at the Women Speak Journal,
right.
and I was flipping through it, and there was this extraordinary image of this child sort of crying, and just was very powerful and very moving. And I was literally just flipping through, and I stopped and I opened and I looked at that and I said, my gosh, who is this artist? This is amazing. And I turned the page and I saw Chantal Bethel, and I thought, well, I've seen her work and this looks so different.
Yes.
And then I heard that you were having a show. I'd come back right at that time and you had a show at the D'Aguilar Art Foundation.
Yeah, I remember.
and I went to see that, and I was just so overwhelmed by the emotion in that show. And I think I've told you this.
Thank
you. So personally, is that,
yeah,
I feel like
that.
For you, that was almost, you know, I didn't know your practice that well before, but I feel like it opened something in you, that
absolutely,
that experience.
It certainly did.
And it was all works that related to the earthquake in
Haiti.
Earthquake
in Haiti, absolutely. But, you know, and this is something that it took me a while to understand myself, what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And emotions are very powerful with me. And I react to emotion, and I have to feel what it is I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I find it very difficult to do a commission,
mm-hmm.
because unless I can feel what it is that I'm going to paint or sculpt or whatever, I find it very difficult to work with it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where I tapped into the work. And there were very, very strong emotions during mm-hmm. the earthquake. I mean, as you know, I was born in Haiti. And I remember looking at the TV when they were showing, you know, what happened. I mean, I saw this church that I knew when I was a small child totally destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And this has left a mark on me that will never, never, never leave me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was extreme, extreme, extreme emotions. In fact, I found out later on that I think they showed that on TV as well. One of the people that were removed from the rubble died was actually a family of mine.
Oh, my gosh.
And I found out much later from my sister, who knew the person. I didn't know the person.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew them. And so it was really extreme emotions for
mm-hmm.
me. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was an exhibition called Potomitan. And after, mm-hmm. we're going to go to a short break. But afterwards, I'd really like to talk to you about that moment. Because I don't know if it's, I want to ask you, like, whether that was a moment for you where you felt something changed for you. Because as an observer looking at your practice,
mm-hmm.
I felt like that was a moment that really opened something up.
Yes, it did.
Definitely. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Right, we're just going to go to a short break. I am very lucky to have Mrs. Chantal Bethel in the studio with me tonight. Chantal is a practicing artist and lives in Grand Bahama and currently has a beautiful exhibition at the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas in the PS Room, which we'll speak about later in the show. You are listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after this short break.
See, it's easy.
Mm-hmm. Not bad, but I mean, talking from the heart is okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's why I feel like, you know, artists are always very quite often nervous, but I always I always just say, it's just imagine we've gone to Starbucks and we're having a chat about your
right.
work.
Not being very academic or anything.
Exactly, so. No. Listen, the whole point of the show is to reach people.
People, exactly.
You know, it's
and
to reach.
Is only way
yeah.
to reach
and
people. Because sometimes I hear artists talking, so what the hell are they talking about?
I know. And you know, they write these texts that are like...
Yes. And then sometimes you also look at the work and you don't see the connection of what they're saying to the work.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can find that a little disturbing.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think that's when they feel they have to mm-hmm. put something on, but they don't even know themselves.
Right.
You know, anyhow. All right, Beats, we're just going to go into the next section, okay? Yeah, we stopped for a break. Shall I just go? And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. You can also go to our Facebook page. We have a dedicated Facebook page for the show, www.facebook.com/NAG Blank Canvas. That's NAG, all caps, and then a big capital B, and then Blank Canvas. So don't have a double B, because then you'll go to the wrong page. And then you can see who's on the show, and you can thumbs up us, and you can leave comments. Please make them nice. That's, you know, generally they are. And we don't have call-ins, so we don't have the, you know, people getting upset with us. But we're a nice show. People like us. And I want to thank you to all my listeners, actually, because very often people overhear me somewhere on a porch or in the supermarket, and they recognize my unusual accent and say, oh, aren't you the art lady? And so I really want to thank all the listeners to the show, because it's really wonderful to get the feedback and to know that you're listening and you enjoy it and you enjoy learning about Bahamian visual art. So I have a wonderful Bahamian artist here in the studio with me this evening. Chantal Bethel is from Grand Bahama, where she just recently survived Hurricane Matthew and actually right now has a little exhibition at the National Art Gallery, which is very beautiful. We're going to talk about it in more depth later in the show, but part of the proceeds from that, which Chantal can speak about later, will go to help some of the individuals in Grand Bahama that suffered after the hurricane. And interestingly, right before the break, we were speaking about a show that, for me personally, was really a kind of moment where I really got deeply into your work in a way that I hadn't been before, and that was a show you did after the really devastating earthquake in Haiti. And that really sort of opened something up. And that was a really beautiful show. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, the pieces? I mean, I saw that show at the Aguilar Art Foundation. It was really very spiritual, very beautiful, and it was painful. And I think that's what's really interesting about some of your work, is that you can get into these painful topics or moments, but it's done with such sensitivity, and the touch you have in your work makes it very accessible and not upsetting or, you know, gross or, you know, it's not.
Yes.
Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes. To start with, I think what happened when I started working on that body of work, I think I let go a little bit, and because I think I control my work quite a bit, mm-hmm. and I like beauty.
Mm-hmm.
But I react to pain, mm-hmm. and what is ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And very often I found what I used to do is to actually paint the ugly, but somehow mask it with beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that point I really let go and let it be what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even in the style, I was able to move away from my beautiful watercolors, mm-hmm. or smooth paint with oil paint, and in fact it was the very first time that I was using mixed media,
mm-hmm.
and I just used everything, you know, that came, you know, that could actually say what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that thoroughly, because they spoke, because you can't control if you're using one medium, sometimes it doesn't say what you want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So I used everything that I thought that would portray.
Well, there seemed to be like a fearlessness in it.
Exactly.
And I thought that was interesting.
I think because the pain was so strong,
mm-hmm.
and I just, you know, went all the way with it. The other thing is, this was the first time that I was actually going into Haitian culture.
Mm-hmm.
And to portray Haitian culture, you really have to go into the religion. The official religion in Haiti is the Catholic, Roman Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
But there is also the voodoo, which mm-hmm. people tend to describe as black magic. This is coming from the U.S. But in fact, the voodoo is an African religion.
Well, Santeria. And yes, yes.
So I went back and researched some more. Now, I grew up in Haiti until I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember in my family, it was very taboo.
Mm-hmm.
You did not go there into mm-hmm. The voodoo. It was something that I was afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember once Vincent de Aguilar asked me, do you paint any of these voodoo flags or whatever? And I said no, because I don't connect that well with
right,
it.
Right, right.
And everything changed once there was this artist from Haiti who actually lives in Miami. And his name is Duval Carrier.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to the National Art Gallery and gave a talk.
Mm-hmm.
And he presented his work the way he actually presented all the voodoo gods,
mm-hmm.
but in such a comical way, mm-hmm. that it made me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point on, and I looked at it in a different way. And it's more almost like history, the same mm-hmm. way we're looking at...
Well, it's a bit like Greek mythology or something
exactly.
like that, isn't it? So
in
these
fact,
sort of characters and...
This yeah. is exactly where I went, because mm-hmm. I said, well, everybody accept the Greek mythology, you know, because it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you talk about the Haitian mythology, mm-hmm. for some reason they're afraid, and I don't know why. And so I looked at it in a different way. So when I was doing the show, and I wanted to talk about Haiti, I needed to... add both sides, Catholic
that, yeah,
and
because
voodoo.
There were the candles, there were the
right, because it's
the sculptures
the
that yes,
yeah, it is the culture. So you can go, you cannot go into that culture
mm-hmm.
unless you face the two sides of
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the first time where I was a little bit fearless. In fact, I was asked that question by some Christian people, aren't you afraid by doing this is going mm-hmm. to affect you? I say, well, no.
Yeah, but I think also there was a fearlessness in, I think, something that, and I don't know if it was conscious or not, but I think specifically, I think probably all artists have this concern, but also very much so in the Caribbean. You know, we are concerned with beauty. We are concerned with, you know, what's going to please people.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we're a little scared to touch those subjects that are a little bit maybe not so pretty because we're not sure if that's going to be accepted or so I feel like something in that allowed you to break past that thing of and it was, don't get me wrong, it was still very beautiful,
right,
the
right.
show was stunning and very visually pleasing, and like I said, you deal with these very tough subjects in a way that's very accessible and not at all, you know, repelling, or it's
right.
not like there's some sort of shock factor.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly it went deep, it went very deep.
But one thing I'd like to say though, although what you're saying is very true, But what I found with me mm-hmm. is that there is so much ugliness in the world.
Yes.
That I found that I always need a balance.
Mm-hmm.
Right after that show, mm-hmm. I needed to paint something mm-hmm. that was just beautiful and spiritual.
Yes, yes, I remember actually.
So I went into healing then.
Yes, yes.
So I always need that. Mm-hmm. I need that balance.
Sort of like
I
yin and yang.
I cannot always stay in the pain.
Yes.
I find that I have to move from one to the other. Mm-hmm. And they both exist in the mm-hmm. world, so you do have to have the duality.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that I find very interesting in your work is you found this new medium as well. And, literally and metaphorically, I feel like you went through the surface. So it felt like maybe with your watercolors and your oils, you were sort of skating on the surface. And then somehow with Potomitan, which was that whole show, you kind of burst through, and then you started using this very interesting technique, the crackle, which is something you put on the canvas and it sort of breaks. Can you describe a little bit that, to try to describe what that looks like to someone listening on the radio? Well, it's a very interesting surface technique that you use.
The crackle is actually a gel medium. It's transparent when you look at it, and when you apply it on, you can apply it on most surfaces, on rock, on cement, on wood, on cloth. Once you apply it, and it's clear, mm-hmm. but then it dries, it's turned white, totally mm-hmm. white, and it cracks.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it interesting because the first time I used it, I threw it away. I threw the piece away. I said, "Well, this is awful," because I didn't actually learn from somebody.
Mm-hmm.
This is something
you self-experiment.
I love to experiment, but I found that in Canada, it's made in Vancouver. And so I decided to try it again a few times, and then I fell in love with it. What I liked about it is once it cracks, you can see what is underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that connects with my philosophy, that you should not, you really have to see what's underneath of what you're seeing mm-hmm. to see the truth,
mm-hmm.
because the truth is not always seen right away.
Mm-hmm.
So it really connects well with my philosophy mm-hmm. that beyond the surface, you can actually find the truth. And what I also like about it is that the way I use it, I don't know if anybody else does use it that way, is once it cracks and it's dry, I use a very tiny brush and I paint each of the pieces separately. And it feels like meditation to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the Buddhists use something like that with sand, when they're painting with sand.
Sure.
And it's so it's very beautiful for me when mm-hmm. I want that part of it. When mm-hmm. I get to that point, then it becomes like a meditating.
Yeah, because sort of get lost in that process, because it's a very minute. I didn't actually realize that. You told me that the other day when we were looking at your show. I thought you just let it crack and the color from underneath came through. But when you said you really went back and like painted each little crack and each little,
it's very time consuming.
Oh my gosh. But I'm sure, because there's one work in the show which I think is really outstanding. I don't know the title of it, but it's got sort of a spiral and there's all these layers of paint, and you go look at that and you almost, it's almost like you're lying on your back in the desert looking at the universe. There are these depths, these layers.
It's a path of the Tainos.
Yeah, yes. And very, very interesting. And it really draws you in, and you can literally stand there for about 20 minutes just sort of getting lost in this painting and, you know, going up close and standing far away. But I think what was interesting about the technique too is that, as you said, you sort of went back to more beautiful work and mm-hmm. sort of went into sort of a healing mode. But this use of the crackle sort of somehow disturbed that in a way that was very interesting. So you were painting sort of flamingos and all very beautiful images, but there was this sort of texture that, like you said, mm-hmm. upset it a little bit, not in a way that, again, was disturbing, but just it questioned, as you said very eloquently, you know, sort of what's actually beyond that, you know.
Yes.
And I thought that was a very interesting way to approach those subjects as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and some of the kind of mixed media, little bottles with little notes and things that you put inside. So I think that's really very interesting.
Well. Now, some of the pieces that I have in this show, the Tainos, I use plaster. It's a technique that I've learned also in Canada, where you use plaster and then use a nail to draw. The drawings are mm-hmm. done with a nail because it's carved.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot just paint it.
Right.
So I've carved the faces or whatever is there, and it gives a feel of something that is ancient. And mm-hmm. it cracks as well.
Mm-hmm.
The plaster cracks,
mm-hmm.
and it gives you the impression that it was there for a very long time. So it's done intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
And so I enjoy doing that as well. And it looks like almost like a tile.
Yeah, exactly. And there's something ancient about it. So I think think we're going to quickly go to another break. When we go back, I'd really like to talk then deeply about the exhibition you have on right now at the National Art Gallery, which I really encourage people to come out and see, because it does have this sort of ancient feeling to it. And that exhibition is called Holy Space, and Holy is spelt H-O-L-E-Y.
Right,
and we'll talk about that right after the break, because it's sort of a play on words about this ritual objects, but also the creation of sort of a spiritual place. So I'm speaking with Chantal Bethel, who is a Grand Bahamian artist who is visiting with us in New Providence and in the studio tonight. She has a really beautiful exhibition, as I just said, called Holy Space, on in the PS room of the National Art Gallery, which just opened recently and will be up for another month, so please come see it. You are listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio, and we're going to be right back after this very short break. There we go. Now we'll talk about the show.
Yes.
And then we're done.
Who's
see?
That person over there?
Easy peasy.
Over here.
Oh, they're actually live. That's another studio. They're on the air. That's the live studio.
Which show is that?
I think that's, is that 90? Is it actually Star? I don't know. That might actually be what's on Star right now.
Oh, I see.
You know? So, yeah. Sometimes you can, they leave the headphones on and you can hear the music and you're like, ah. All right. Ready when you are. And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget, you can also stream us live from the website www.guardiantalkradio.com or download the app from the PlayStation, PlayStation, that's the game. From the Play Store or the App Store. You can tell that I'm like over 40, right? Because I don't know all the technology names. My producer's just laughing his head off. Anyhow, go download that app thingy on your phone and you can listen to us as you walk around. So anyhow, I have Chantal Bethel in the studio with me this evening. Chantal is an artist who lives in Grand Bahama. She is has been speaking about how her practice evolved when we got up to current times, where she currently has an exhibition in the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas in the PS room. And it's really a very lovely meditative show that I encourage people come look at, because it's just visually very beautiful, but also, you know, again, touches on a dark topic. You had a show almost a year ago in Brussels.
Yes.
And I saw some of the work and I said, oh wow, this is really interesting, and this could work really well in the PS. Mm-hmm. And luckily you sold a lot of that work, and so then you went into a new phase of making more work. So why don't you talk a little bit about that? And I think also it's interesting, as I said before the break, that it seems to be your calling, that the proceeds from your Potomitan show, where you made a really beautiful catalog, and actually I should say that one of her pieces from that exhibition was taken by a very prestigious museum in the United States of America, the Waterloo Center for the Arts, which has a very, very large Haitian and Bahamian art collection. They have one of the biggest Amos Ferguson collections in the world, and they took one of Chantal Bethel's pieces from that show, but that catalog that you made, the proceeds of that went to support Haiti. Mm-hmm. And now this exhibition that you made for the National Art Gallery, mm-hmm. you've also made a very nice catalog, mm-hmm. and you have asked that the proceeds of that go to support your fellow Grand Bahamians. So why don't you speak a little bit about, you know, what the show's, what is this Holy Space, H-O-L-E-Y, mm-hmm. that you've created, and what that means for you. And
thank you. The show that I did in Brussels was actually inspired by my sister-in-law's book, Gwenahani, My Love. And when I was asked to do the show in Brussels, they wanted something about the Bahamas.
I should say that your sister-in-law is the poet, very well-known poet, Marion Bethel.
Yes. And so the show, they wanted something about the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the people in Brussels knew my flamingo paintings.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought they were beautiful. So they wanted me to bring in some flamingos. So I sort of connected the flamingos to Guanahani, which is actually San Salvador, mm-hmm. which is the island where Christopher Columbus first landed in Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
And so so that show really had two sides. One side was just showing the tropical splendor of the Bahamas, and the other side actually talked about Columbus and the consequences of his arrival mm-hmm. in the New World. And so But while I was working on that first show, I was walking on the beach with my sister and found those stones that had holes in them, but I had never seen so many. It's a very remote area of Grand Bahama in High Rock. And so they were interesting. So I took a basket full and took them home. And
now these little sort of, they're sort of round, white. Then well, they normally
they have different shapes. They're all white.
They're all different. They're all white. They all. I don't know if it's just the ones shape. You they picked have, up, but the ones yes. you collected are all sort of palm sized, or they can fit in
yes,
your hand.
Yes, in your hand.
And they have these very sizes. Almost precise round holes in them, which
yes.
are almost
Absolutely.
Look like they've been drilled.
And some are shaped like hearts.
Yes.
Some are shaped like bones. Some are shaped like heads. Mm-hmm. And they were so intriguing. So I went online and I wrote a stone with a hole. And the word holy stone came up. And I realized, I read about it, and it says that it is a very spiritual stone. And in the ancient times, they used to use them and put a string in the hole and make an amulet. Mm-hmm. And they were used as protective stones. And so there is a very spiritual connotation to them. So while I was working on the show, the stone actually reminded me of bones.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, there's some 40,000 plus Taino Indian that disappear, whether they were killed or whether they had diseases that killed them. So the whole culture, mm-hmm. you know, disappeared. And so it became very a very interesting part of my work. So I've used a few of them when I went to Brussels, and the show, you know, went very well. And as Amanda said, she invited me to continue the conversation in the PS room at National Art Gallery. And then my approach became totally different. Mm-hmm. At that point, I looked at the side where, you know, the that whole culture was being, mm-hmm. you know, disappeared. And so as I was creating the body of work, I started by having, you know, before Christopher Columbus even dreamed of sailing west,
mm-hmm.
there were peaceful, beautiful people mm-hmm. that lived here. They were the Tainos.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sort of portrayed, you know, the Tainos. And as you know, they had no language. Well, they had language, but it's not written.
Not a written language,
not a
yeah.
written language,
yeah.
right, exactly. And so I started doing the research on the petroglyph, which mm-hmm. is the drawings that were on rock or whatever. And they were very primitive sort mm-hmm. of drawings, you know, that represent either a child or a bird or a fish. And so there's a lot of that in the show. Mm-hmm. And so I use that throughout the show.
And you use that technique you described before with the
yes,
nail and the plaster.
Exactly.
So you're sort of recreating this kind of
plaster yeah. and using a nail to actually mm-hmm. draw the figures. They really look like they came from that era.
Mm-hmm.
So it made it very interesting. Mm. Yes.
And there's a really lovely piece. So you walk into the show. First of all, you've done this really lovely thing where over the door of the PS room, you've created this sort of black hole.
Yes.
Or you've painted a black mm-hmm. circle.
The circle,
so
yes.
you walk through this. You're sort of drawn through this. It's almost like you're going into a cave.
Yes.
And you go into then the holy space, H-O-L-Y,
right.
but also H-O-L-E-Y.
Right, right. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the circle, in my research again, what I found out is that in the ancient time, the circle represented for the people a protective form
mm-hmm.
where you keep evil out and you enter into the sacred space. And this is what I wanted to create. It's mm-hmm. a sacred space where we pay homage to this culture that has disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And so hence that circle, the black circle, mm-hmm. I wanted the entrance. I wanted the people to enter mm-hmm. Into that circle.
And to be conscious somehow
right.
that they were entering.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But before I thought of the door, I actually created a circle of life, which is a circle sculpture. I don't know if you saw the sculpture. The base is wood with the Taino language, and the circle is just some stone, holy mm-hmm. stones. And then when I thought of it, I said, well, I want people to go through it. I want people to feel what I was saying. And this is why I at the door, we decided to have the door as a circle mm-hmm. as well. So we created that circle for as an entrance.
And
yes.
then you go in, and to the immediate right, there's the piece. I'm quite pleased it didn't sell at the show in Brussels because it was a very strong piece, and it was
right.
one of the ones that I really loved, which is it's sort of like a little box, and you sort of look into the box, and Christopher Columbus is there behind bars.
Yes.
Well, but he's sort of gazing at this holy rock, a holy stone, but you've painted it gold, and it's sort of just out of his reach, and it's like he's behind. Behind the these bars, and he's like, oh, there's the gold.
Yes, and then you also have all the skulls of the people who died right. because of him. And I painted that stone gold because this is what they were after. They were after spices, mm-hmm. and the Spaniards were after mm-hmm. spices and after, you know, gold. Mm-hmm. Well, Christopher Columbus wasn't the only one. You know, he was one of them. But mm-hmm. then I used him because he's the one that we want to celebrate, you know. Mm-hmm. And we say this man actually got lost and found us. But, mm-hmm. you know, and that sort of a thing. But it's interesting because I get two different reactions. One is that, why are you putting him behind bars? And I say, well, because I think, you know, there were some crimes committed. He is behind bars. And then on the other hand, during the opening night, I had a young Rasta man who came to me and wanted to know, why is my show so peaceful? Because he was upset, because he said, I should have created some pieces that would make people mad because Christopher, these people destroyed the Tainos. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, so I had to explain to him that, you know, you can look at it that way, but that was not my intention. My intention was to actually tell the truth the way mm-hmm. it is, because they don't always speak about the fact that, you know, many people died because of mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, my intention was to face the truth and then let go.
And make peace with it.
So peace
yes.
and love yes. was yes. actually my intention for the sanctuary. So when I created that sanctuary, I wanted it to be peaceful.
But it's interesting that he picked up on that, and I think that's what I spoke to at the beginning of the show, is that you have this talent for when you do work that addresses these difficult issues, of making work that even though, I mean, there's some pieces in the show that, you know, they have a dismembered head or something,
right,
but
right.
But when you look at it, it's not gory. It's right. not like, and as this Rasta man picked up on, it's very peaceful.
Right.
And I think that's really something that we can all learn from. And actually, you know, my daughter's at that age where she's like, oh, you know, Christopher, you know, everything's, you know, she's very righteous about everything. Christopher Columbus, and we shouldn't remember him. And I say, well, actually, I believe we should remember him.
We have to.
We have to.
It
Maybe
happened.
We shouldn't remember him as a hero.
Right.
But we do need
Correct.
To remember what happened, just like, you know, we have all the Holocaust memorials, right?
Yeah.
Because remembering is important. And the act of remembering mm-hmm. should not be to make people angry
no.
and vindictive.
No.
But to make people
to know the truth.
To know the truth.
And then move on.
To accept it and move on. And learn.
Yeah,
and learn
get
from.
You get this kind of reaction whenever you talk about slavery. You say, why are you talking about slavery? It's no more slavery. It was there.
Yeah, of course it was.
It was there.
Yeah.
So it affected us. So you have to face the truth. You have to know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean you have to stay in there like it was happening to you all the time.
Exactly. And I think
you need
that's.
To move on. You
yeah,
have to
well,
let go.
You do have that's, to let go. You have to, or you have to resolve yourself to the painful past
absolutely.
And say, okay, now what can I do as a human to make it better
that's
moving
what I
forward?
Call healing.
Yep. Exactly.
So this is the only way to go about it.
So I think it's very interesting.
It's my
because,
approach.
Yeah, and it's a really wonderful approach because, again, you're dealing with this topic, which is, you know, controversial and upsetting. And again, like, there's some pieces. There's the one when you come in and there's a pile of these rocks and these small stones.
Yes.
And they do look, it does look like a pile of bones.
Yes.
And then there's a sort of hanging spiral
yes.
on the sculpture above it, which is sort of this one piece where there's a sort of almost like a helix,
yes.
Like DNA or something,
yes.
of these hanging holy stones. And there is something,
it's
you
like
know,
a it's, spine.
It's like a spine.
It's, a spine,
it's
yes.
somehow, if you look at it as bones, it's a bit creepy, but at the
yes.
same time, it's a very beautiful
yeah,
and it's
I
a very
it
peaceful piece.
Yes.
And it almost also makes you think of the stones becoming weightless
yes.
and
they
and
started
moving
going
up.
Yeah, it
and
is
moving.
Called rising souls. And at the top, they are suspended from a circle. Again, using that circle, the intention was that, you know, it was being protected.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the boundary
mm-hmm.
where all those souls are coming from the ground, and then they're just rising to the top.
And perhaps yes. they're finding peace
yes.
once they...
Well,
once
that's
they,
the intention yeah. that they yeah. find peace, because it wasn't peaceful for them
mm-hmm.
afterwards. If you looked at the dance that we had, I want to explain the, mm-hmm. the two young girls who danced for mm-hmm. the opening. The first one, Siobhan Smith, who's a very classical ballerina, very well trained.
Mm-hmm.
And during the dance, she presented, she gave some flowers.
She gave some flowers,
Bird
yes.
of Paradise
yes.
that I had asked her to give to people. The reason for it is that when Columbus came to the islands, the people, he himself wrote that in his journal, that they were so peaceful, so these people gave you anything that they have.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, this Spaniard turned around and killed them.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end, the second dancer, who's a contemporary dancer mm-hmm. from Nassau, she presented the stones.
Yes.
And that was what happened after the passage of the Spaniard. This is all that remained. There were no more flowers. All mm-hmm. he had was the bones. And that was the, mm-hmm. the creation. Mm-hmm. They were responding, actually, to my work.
Mm-hmm. Which I really liked, too, actually, that it became sort of interdisciplinary. And Marion Bethel, your sister-in-law, read some
poetry,
poems that she read.
She wrote especially the second poem, A Question of Love, was written mm-hmm. especially for this exhibition. The first one existed before the Taino mm-hmm. Rebirth, but the second one was written especially for the show.
So what next, Chantal?
Oh,
so was that an act of healing, or was that an act of, or do you now need to, because you know you spoke after Potomutan, that was so, do you feel now you need to go into a phase? Was this a very difficult subject for you to treat?
I honestly don't know what will happen, but I love history.
Mm-hmm.
So those type of show, they both, I go into history as well very much. So this is something that I enjoy doing very much.
Especially Grand Bahamian history,
yes.
I have to say, because you were quite instrumental in
the Heritage Foundation.
In the Heritage Foundation.
I'm the co-founder of the Heritage Foundation. So because we find, the reason that was founded actually is because there are very few artifacts mm-hmm. on Grand Bahama. And we thought that the way to show history is by using art.
Mm-hmm.
Because art, to me, can be a window into history.
Absolutely.
And so, and I enjoy doing that.
And will become history. And I think that's something that, you know, we try to, of course, educate people on what our mission is at the National Art Gallery.
Yes.
We spend a lot of time talking about the current shows mm-hmm. because that, of course, is, you know, the way to keep things interesting and mm-hmm. bring new audiences in. Mm-hmm. But, of course, underlying all of that, our core mandate is to collect works and to keep those works safe for
history. Posterity.
Yes, because in 200 years, mm-hmm. people will look back and they'll say, oh, that's what they were talking about then.
Exactly.
And that these things become artifacts. And I think you also, with a group of other artists, created your own artifacts for the Heritage Foundation.
Yes, we did. We did. We created some artifacts. And
which are going to be part of the founding collection of the NAGB in Grand Bahama.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, yes. The whole collection is now part of the NAGB.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. So we're quite proud of that, actually. So it was work that we've done for 10 years, mm-hmm. actually, and we've stopped. So now NAGB is going
NAGB
to move
will
in
take on.
To Grand Bahama. We are waiting.
I know, we all are. We're excited. Well, the progress on the building is happening.
Yes.
And again, it is a public-private partnership. So,
yes.
you know, the NAGB isn't really sort of controlling, but we're helping move that along.
Yeah, and I think NAGB is going to make it very exciting.
I think so. And I have to say, the few trips we've done there as a team, I've been out now 3 times, I think. I gave a... We did an artist talk at the RAND Center, and then I came and did a lecture at the library for the students, and then we sent the education team out. We did a little show at the Charles Hayward Library, which you assisted us in organizing, and the feedback that that we've had whenever, you know, we're on the ground is so overwhelming.
Yes. And you know, there are many artists on Grand Bahama. And so... And it's very difficult for artists in Grand Bahama to come to Nassau.
Of course it
because
is. Yeah.
It's expensive.
Yeah.
And you cannot come every time there is something mm-hmm. happening. So,
no, exactly.
So we're missing out. We feel like we're missing out. So it'd be good to have some of it, you know, down there. Mm-hmm. Not all, but at least some.
So with your very important help, this will be our first sort of flagship annex. And one hopes that, you know, a vision I think we all harbor in our hearts is that one day we'll be able to see, even if it's small, even if it's a tiny little space on every inhabited island, where we can bring a few pieces from the collection, where we can teach educational workshops, because again, now we've visited Eleuthera as well, and we'll be going hopefully to Long Island soon. We'll just have somebody there looking for a space for us, and those trips are so valuable. But I think to have an actual space on Grand Bahama will be something really extraordinary.
I think so too. I'm waiting.
We're all waiting. I know we're all waiting. So on that note, I'm going to say thank you very much to Chantal Bethel for coming in the studio tonight.
Thank you.
It's always, like I said, it's always so great because it is so difficult, the logistics between the islands, and when we have Grand Bahamians here, it's always such a pleasure to have them on the show. So I'm just going to have a little tiny bit of housekeeping. So Chantal Bethel's exhibition is entitled Holy Space. It is on view through the middle of December, I believe.
Actually, the end of December.
The end of December. Okay, so you've got 2 months to see it, but don't put it off. I would come right away and look at it. And don't forget that the NAGB is always free on Sundays, so there's no reason not to come. You can just wander in on Sunday, take in a couple of pieces, or take in Chantal's show, go away, come back another Sunday. So we're there for all the locals to really enjoy, you know, at their own pace during the week. It's always free for children under 12. So, you know, come along after school, let the kids come in and engage with the work, because there's really a lot of extremely interesting and thoughtful pieces, but also just a lot of really pretty things. Sometimes people say, well, should I go in? I go, if you like looking at pretty things,
go
on in.
Absolutely.
We did extend all the current exhibitions because of Hurricane Matthew. So until the end of November, the Sustainable Exuma show will be on display on the upper floor. That's a really interesting show about sustainability and creativity and how to approach living on the islands in the 21st century and how to do that sustainably. We have the Double Dutch with Heino Schmidt and Deborah Enzinger. And on the ground floor, we have the really wonderful From Columbus to Junkanoo show that was curated to go to Cuba by Avery Wright and Jody Minnis. And that's a really great overview of Bahamian history and, in fact, very interesting pieces in there.
Connected to
Holy Space, because there's a very interesting room about the arrival of Columbus with painting by Jackson Burnside, another one by Brent Malone. So there's really a lot to see at the National Art Gallery. Right now, Chantal Bethel's show is our star attraction. So please come down and support your local artists, because it's so important for all of us. And Mrs. Bethel, I want to thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Thank you for having me.
And I want to thank you. It's our pleasure. I want to thank you also for the show, which is beautiful. And once again, I want to repeat that the sales from the catalog, Mrs. Bethel has very kindly decided that all sales, every single penny of the sale of the catalog that she produced for the show will go directly to support Grand Bahama in the relief effort after Hurricane Matthew. So
I
want to thank you for that. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery, and you've been listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening, and good night.
Very nice.
Done. So we're just going to go take a picture. Mm. Okay, and you actually weren't being filmed, just so you know.
Really?
They do have live on sometimes. They have live shows that happen,
I see.
They have that set up. But let me just make sure. Guided tour. Yes, okay. Shipment. Maybe technically delivered. The last Double Dutch show still hasn't been returned to Miami because of the whole shipping is the biggest expense, pain in the ass. Yeah. I tell you, it really even with the gallery and
which
Frankfurt,
one? The one that
any
was
shipping, but, even
shipping is a pain.
Even when Uli had the gallery in Frankfurt, even within Europe, shipping was still.
It is difficult.
It's expensive. It's difficult.
Tell me about
it. You can't hold anyone liable because they make you pay, right? And then they're like, "Oh, the crate has a hole. Sorry."
Same thing.
Living here,
I've been
through
it.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
It's really not easy.
So we have to learn to make the art in now.
Well, I always say to Holly, I say, because, we
what
had
do
a few
I do
pickups
this?
With the last few shows, and we spent, way too much money on shipping, and I said to Holly, I said, listen, don't bring objects, bring people.
Right.
It's much more practical.
Practical.
They can carry their work.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the exchange.
Exactly.
Which is, again, so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
So try to bring people and have them make the work.
Make the work here.
The work. Don't ship work, because it's $4,000 to ship things to Miami, and you can buy it for that much money.
Exactly.
So, and anyhow.
I've been there.
Yeah, I know you have. It's really,
that.
Listen, it's
yes.
It's the biggest thing holding back our industry right now for everybody.